we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
News Quiz, we start with a cutting from Hampshire Health Watch magazine, read by Neil Sleet.
New poll reveals surveys are a waste of time.
And our thanks to Kath Gillett for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Rebecca Front and Jeremy Hardy. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkin and Justin Morehouse. Rebecca, who this week, as a mark of respect, did not strike?
Big Ben.
Yes, 2 points. Next question. Yeah.
Baroness Thatcher, I should just reiterate, died last week.
I know
you covered it, but I'm shocked by the fact that the media have been very quiet
about it. I know.
Very, very understated it's all been. So, obviously, yes, the funeral this week. And the important thing to remember is it wasn't a state funeral. It wasn't,
right,
Sandy, a state funeral.
Okay.
It was an intimate funeral.
Yes.
Just family, friends, St. Paul's Cathedral, men with braid and the Queen. So very, very much like your average sort of funeral. Anyway, it was all very grand and full of pomp, very expensive. I've no idea how expensive, but when you see the Chancellor of the Exchequer in tears, you know, probably a reason to worry. I think it is all right in this age of austerity, because fortunately a lot of people just a few days before had given up their benefits. So I think it's all fine and we can probably afford it. But by and large, it all went off quite smoothly. There were protests, as everybody knew there would be. Lots of people turned their backs. I actually genuinely got slightly confused because I switched on some time into it and thought, oh, there seems to be a mass police protest because all the police are standing with their backs. Because realised, A, that they had to stand with their backs to it so they could watch the crowd, and B, that I'm very, very stupid. And the press were terribly happy because it turns out she's got very photogenic grandchildren.
Yes.
So there was the Pippa effect. Mm. It was
she's
all
like,
fine.
She's 19, isn't she?
She's 19.
19 years old. One of the youngest people present, I presumably because organisers had warned that the ceremony wouldn't be suitable for minors.
I didn't enjoy the funeral, because I don't really enjoy funerals, but I was disappointed that they cancelled Homes Under the Hammer on BBC One, which is, if you're not aware, is a programme about people who get their houses repossessed and then they're sold at auction to spiff landlords. It's kind of apt that it should have been on, really. They should have held it back and showed that. And you mentioned George Osborne crying. I read the thing in the paper today which made me stop and think about the world in which we live in. This was an actual quote from Tony Blair's former spin doctor, Lance Prince, who said, "The footage of George Osborne crying won't do his image any harm." What a twisted world we've ended up in.
Even on the day Cameron was interviewed, he said, well, today's a day for setting aside politics and really to remember to vote Conservative at the next general election. And it did make that funeral reminded you what horrible friends she had. I was thinking, blimey, she didn't half know some horrible people, didn't she? I mean, there's Netanyahu, Tony Blair, Henry Kissinger. I mean, I'd be lucky to get half a dozen, but at least they won't be mass murderers and Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's just so... Because, oh, look, there's F.W. de Klerk. There's Geoffrey Archer. Oh, there's Kelvin McKenzie. I haven't seen so many scary white men in one place since I was at Wimbledon dog track.
It was terrifying because you hadn't seen a lot of these people for a very long time. It was like somebody had left the heating on in the studio where they recorded Spitting Image. The Times said that the women were dressed soberly and respectfully. What did they think they were going to come in day glow onesies? It's a... And I love this. The Queen came dressed as herself.
Wouldn't it be brilliant if she comes dressed as Pudsey?
Yeah. Mr. Blobby.
It was extraordinary, the emphasis on the fashion. It was like it was a kind of monochrome ascot.
Normally, all the funerals I go to, it's like the funeral and then you go back to a pub with a flat roof. You know, they're really poor estate. you know you're working class when the wake is in a pub with a flat roof and it's... And it's basically, you know, it's boiled egg sandwiches and that pie, that pork pie with an egg in the middle. How long are those eggs, by the way? do the chickens look like that way, those eggs?
Hugo, were you surprised that there was less protest?
No, because, I mean, everyone expected there to be lots of protests in the same way there's been loads and loads of coverage. But, I mean, like, I'm 36. When I think of kind of Grand Zero Britain, it's Thatcher's Britain. I don't remember what Britain was like before Thatcher. There's an awful lot of people who are younger than me who are just not really that sure why she would be important to anyone or what they'd protest about or why they'd bother lining the streets. She's just an old lady to them. And so I think it's kind of... I mean, there's no joke at the end of this, but
it says something about how bleak the news has been this week, that one of the lighter stories is the funeral of this old woman.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. My dad, who knew her well, made a speech in the Commons when they had the debate after she died, and he said that it was often said that she had no wit and that she wasn't a consensus politician, but he wants her to say that she did believe in consensus because there should be consensus behind her convictions. And he said he thought that was wit at the time, but as the years went by, he became less sure.
The funeral for Baroness Thatcher was held on Wednesday and saw Big Ben silenced as a mark of respect for the first time since Sir Winston Churchill was laid to rest in 1965. The silencing of Big Ben was a fine tribute, which moved many to tears and left even more people unsure about whether the lunchtime news had started. The Times described the funeral as fitting and moving. The Guardian said it was truly dignified, while Variety said it was Meryl Streep's greatest performance to date. 2 points to Rebecca. Jeremy, who met with Blair to clear the air?
Ed Miliband, because Blair is being like the sort of spectre at the feast. He's being a nightmare, Blair. And Ed Miliband should go and say, look, can you shut up? There's a reason why you're not Prime Minister anymore. It's because you're a warmongering weirdo and everyone hates you. Can you just bog off? Just go and just enjoy your wealth and ponce about pretending you're bringing peace to the Middle East and giving your speaking tours for the rest of your life until your face falls off. Just go away.
I have to say, I think Tony Blair's criticism has been a sort of mixed blessing for Ed Miliband, because on the one hand, it has reduced his party's confidence in him as a leader, but on the other, it has reminded everyone who he is. So... That's quite a good thing. We'd kind of forgotten about it.
The criticism was that Labour shouldn't just be a party of opposition. Mm. And I thought, well, it would be a start, though, wouldn't it?
Well, Blair said he could find no evidence that the Labour Party was making substantial leaps forward. And I thought, that's the first time I've ever seen him concerned about finding evidence.
The thing I love about Ed Miliband is the way he seems to basically make policy and create positions on the basis of film titles. Because first he had The New Generation, which is like a Star Trek film, if you remember that. It was all going to be Ed Miliband's New Generation. Then he had that great Predators versus Producers, which was like a sci-fi, because the producers hold onto your face and lay an egg in your brain. Okay. And his most recent one was that he's worried about a lost decade, which sounds a bit like The Hangover, you know. It's going to last forever. It's sort of economic turmoil forever and ever, but you're really, really hoping that eventually a rich Chinese guy jumps out of the boot.
One Nation sounds bad. One Nation sounds like some people who come seventh on X Factor, doesn't it?
They're keen on a slogan, though, all politicians now, aren't they? Because Lord Prescott tried to come to Miliband's aid, and his slogan was, "Let's stop complaining and get campaigning," which is better than his earlier effort, which was, "Leave him, Tony, it's not worth it."
Prescott was doing this thing. You always know a political party's in trouble when they start calling for unity. And Prescott was doing this thing where he was saying, yeah, we need to all be together, we need to unite. The people we need to watch out are the ones who are trying to split the party, the bastards. Let's turn on them and have unity.
The papers I read were saying that Miliband was turning on the Blairites. And you think, these people are Blairites, and we had the Thatcherites we remembered of, and we have the Brownites. The problem is Miliband's people haven't got a name. Because it couldn't really be called the Milibanites, because that sounds like something you have wrong with you downstairs, isn't it?
I think Milibandite sounds like some people that Moses smote.
What are Miliband supporters called, though? What are they, the Miliband band? Milibanders?
You don't need a name for them, because there aren't any.
Ed Miliband has met with Tony Blair in a bid to clear the air after the ex-Prime Minister issued a public warning that the party was drifting too far to the left. In a piece for last week's New Statesman, Blair said the Labour Party is back as the party opposing Tory cuts, which immediately prompted Ed Miliband to add opposing Tory cuts to his to-do list. Tony Blair was elected head of the Labour Party in 1994 following the death of John Smith, while Ed Miliband became leader in 2010 after collecting 30 tokens from packets of Cocoa Pops. 2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, who said, not in my backyard, to the government?
rebels.
Yes.
Rebels said this. The government has this policy spearheaded by Eric Pickles, I think. They want to allow people to build extensions on the back of their houses of up to 8 metres without planning permission. Now, there's a big rebellion because some other Conservatives have realised this might mean people will put big things on the back of their houses. Mm. So there's this big uproar. The rebellion's being led by Zach Goldsmith, who doesn't understand why people want to put extensions on their houses, because he thinks if you want a bigger house, just move to one. What's the problem? or just go to one of your bigger ones. What's really interesting about this is it shows the schism between two completely different types of Tories. Because on the one hand, you've got your Eric Pickles kind of pull yourselves up by your bootstraps. You need to have a big extension on the back of your house that's bigger than your neighbour's extension to make up for the size of your penis sort of thing. And on the other hand, you've got your traditional kind of NIMBY Tories, not in my backyard, who think, well, I'm already completely happy with the size of my extension and my penis. And I don't want anyone having an extension or penis extension that's going to threaten that.
Old penis, new penis kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, you've got half the Tories saying no to bigger penises.
Do you know, honestly, I'm never going to be able to look at another conservatory. I'm excited about the whole thing, about extending. I live on a boat on the Thames, and my new conservatory is going to be built on the terrace of the House of Commons. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
In London, forgive me if I'm wrong, I keep mentioning him like I've never been before, but I'm in London.
There's something very sweet and wide-eyed. Have you bought an A to Z and have been wandering around with your mouth open?
The point is, in London, I believe that it's difficult for a lot of people to extend because you're already cramped and you're already on top of each other and, you know, you live your lives and never smile. And and a lot of people are going underground, aren't they? They're building dungeons.
Yes. Bunkers.
Now, I don't know if anybody's read 50 Shades of Grey, but he has a dungeon just for the sex. It's amazing. And I thought, you know what, if I had a dungeon, it wouldn't just be for sex, it'd be for a couple of lawnmowers as well. Her mum's table that we only ever use at Christmas would be in there as well, alongside me gallows or whatever I'd have in there. I've not thought about it, I'll be honest with you.
Dozens of government MPs staged a backbench rebellion about Eric Pickles' proposals for planning regulation laws to be relaxed. The new plans would allow homeowners to extend up to 8 metres without planning permission, which is great news if you live in a block of flats. Pickles has promised to bring forward a compromise when the bill is introduced in the House of Lords. I say introduced, the bill will actually be extended from the Commons 20 feet into the House. At the end of round one, the scores are Rebecca and Jeremy have got 4 points, but so too have Hugo and Justin. We start round two with a listing spotted on Amazon.co.uk.
Karma Excitra, a sexual position guide with 3D hologram technology. Browse this section for more perfect Mother's Day gifts.
Rebecca, why do those that can't earn less?
Michael Gove issued a policy statement this week saying that teachers are highly trained professionals who should be allowed to educate our young people without government interference. Mm. Of course he didn't. Oh, ridiculous.
Sorry.
No, he didn't do that. He slipped through another couple of edicts, which are just designed to wind up teachers, really. One of which was to do with performance-related pay, based on results, based on, you know, how much your pupils love you, and whether you run a hockey club after school. And it all seems to be based a little bit on that slightly kind of, I'm only saying what we're all thinking type of thinking. You know what I mean? That kind of, you know, ooh, they get such long holidays and it's all very easy for them. And I have a theory about this. I don't know if you noticed that. Well, you may have done, Justin, because you just come down to London. It's quite difficult to get a cab in London at the moment. And my theory is that a large number of London cab drivers are holed up in a room somewhere. And they are, in fact, thinking up policy for Michael Gove.
Some of the stuff was extraordinary. One of the keys to determining performance-related pay is wider outcomes for pupils. What on earth is that? We've entered you for a GCSE, but you did so well. You've also won this hi-fi system and a speedboat.
So there's part of their pay they will be rewarded if their pupils like them.
Yeah.
Yeah, then genuinely at my school, this would have worked brilliantly. The teacher would have come in at 9 o'clock and said, listen, lads, fill this form in. See you Friday. We'd have liked him a lot.
I don't think... I mean, performance-related pay for teachers is not inherently a bad idea. You know, it depends how it's judged. It is very hard to sack bad teachers, and it's very hard to reward good teachers at the moment. Basically, it's not very surprising that the teaching unions hate this and hate Michael Gove, because they hate everyone. They basically slow-hand-clapped every education secretary back for the last century. You could put Nelson Mandela and the Dalai Lama at the NUT conference and they'd sit there going boo and flicking soggies at him off the rulers. You know? They're really, really angry people and they always have
been. They spend all day with children. What do you expect them to be like?
Michael Gove, next time he stands in front of the unruly, he should just go, it's your own time you're wasting. I did a gig the other week and my old teacher came. He emailed me before he was coming and he sent me this email. He goes, hi, Justin, it's Mr. Townsend, your old maths teacher. He said, I'm coming along to the gig. Be nice to meet you. And I emailed him back. I said, it'd be lovely to meet you. He was a really great teacher. I remember him. And I sent him my phone number and he rang me. I picked the phone up and he went, hi, Justin, it's Terry. And I went, who? He went, Terry Townsend, your maths teacher. He went, just call yourself Mr. Townsend. Just leave it there.
About 6 months ago, I was having an argument with somebody about something on Twitter, and he started saying all these sort of sweeping things about my life and my childhood. And I replied and said, like, who the hell are you? Just leave me alone. You know nothing about me. And he said, it's Mr. Robertson. I was your primary school teacher in primary five. Very nice man, actually.
Advice issued to head teachers by the Department of Education states that pupils' progress and behaviour can be used to assess teachers' suitability for performance-related pay. Christine Blair, the General Secretary of the NUT, said performance-related pay is increasingly discredited elsewhere as a means of motivating employees. Far better to let them have an extra 15 minutes at break time or let them bring in their own toys. Many teachers refused to describe themselves as angry with the changes. Instead, they shot a stern look over their glasses and said they were very, very disappointed. 2 points to Rebecca. Justin, why has a row about a school trip gone nuclear?
All right, this is the story of the Panorama programme, which was filmed in North Korea, jumping on the back of a school trip. They have a similar programme in North Korea. It's called Paranoia. And it's John Sweeney, who's the reporter, who went with a group of students from the LSE, the London School of Economics. A lot of criticism for it. For me, it raises several important questions, frankly. I mean, first of all, what kind of school sends their kids on a school trip to North Korea? I mean, we used to go Alton Towers if we'd been very well behaved. I mean, and John Sweeney, I don't know if any of you saw the programme. He was an undercover reporter with a group of students going to the most secretive and brutal totalitarian regime in the world. For a man who looks about 58, he didn't really look like a student. He was the worst undercover reporter I've ever seen. He looked like one of those, when you go on holiday with your mates and the dad drops you off at the airport and goes, you know what, I'm coming with you. Is that what has happened? Someone's gone, who's brought the dad? And he's going, you know, don't call me Gerald, lads, I'm called Jezza now.
This is bizarre, because some of the students said that the BBC had endangered their lives, but if you're worried about danger, maybe you don't go to North Korea when they're threatening nuclear war.
Well, and the LSE is saying, you know, this is outrageous because it'll be much harder for us to study North Korea in the future. But you're thinking, why do you want to study North Korea? You know, I mean, if you want to look into some sort of crazy state where a leader dies and the whole country goes into sort of mental mourning for the best part of a fortnight, then you can stay much closer to home.
Sweeney, though, was fantastically pleased with himself, wasn't it? I mean, the ones who go undercover, they love that. They're on the telly going, I'm wearing special trousers that make me invisible, but I'm still incredibly brave and self-righteous. And he's standing there, looking through this barbed wire fence, saying, welcome to the real North Korea. I thought, I don't think anyone's under major illusions about North Korea. I haven't checked TripAdvisor, but I think it's roundly agreed to be a bit of a kazi. I think it's pretty much on a par with Basingstoke. I don't think anyone...
If we're going to do these programmes and do a Panorama North Korea special, I think we should go the whole hog and let's get Jeremy Kyle in there sorting out North Korea. Dear leader, look at me, look at me. Let's sort this out, let's do a DNA test. He wasn't your dad. Let's do Strictly Come Dancing. Or in North Korea, very Strictly Come Dancing.
The London School of Economics is furious that journalists from BBC's Panorama joined a group of LSE students on a tour of North Korea. Panorama reporter John Sweeney blended into the tour party of students by sleeping till lunchtime and posting pictures of himself on Facebook, stealing a traffic cone from outside the crypt of the eternal leader, Kim Il-sung. At the end of round two, the scores are Rebecca and Jeremy have got 8 points, but so too have Hugo and Justin. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the West Sussex Police Neighbourhood Watch Bulletin.
A scam has been reported involving a man professing to sell mobile phones. When the victim checked the phone they believed they'd bought, they discovered they had, in fact, purchased 4 pints of milk.
That's something I bought. I bought 4 pints of milk, ended up with a phone and a 12-month contract.
Jeremy, who said getting high laid the economy low?
David Nutt, who was the bloke who was sacked by the last government because he said we need to legalise drugs because this isn't working, the war on drugs isn't working, so they got rid of him. Now, David Nutt's come up with a new theory, which is that the recent crash, was caused by cocaine because he's observed that, you know, people doing a lot of cocaine are quite arsey and talk a lot and have very short attention span. And it's not physically addictive, but it is psychologically addictive. And the only way to get off cocaine is to go to Boots and buy yourself some Hubris patches. So it's not surprising that bankers do a lot of toot.
I love you talking about drugs, Jeremy. It's honestly 2 peppermint teas and you're off your face.
Imagine how surreal the banking crash would have been if they'd been on LSD instead.
If you'd had ecstasy, it'd have been fantastic. We've lost 1 million, but I love you.
Can I just say, on the drug thing, I lied about Jeremy. He's actually on 2 asthma inhalers a day at the minute. That's true, isn't it? You do.
I do. I do a brown one and a blue one.
Yeah.
I do the brown one to get me going and the blue one just to level me off in the afternoon when I need some quiet chill-out time. I think they're quite jaunty asthma inhalers. It's a good prop. It's good. I've always wished I smoked because it's good to have something in your hands that you can... And like reading glasses are good because you can take them off and look sort of learned and wise and say things like, but Inspector, there's something I don't understand. You know, and asthma inhalers are quite good.
It's like a pipe, isn't it? Like a
pipe. Yes, you can stand with your back to the fireplace and say, hey, we want to marry my daughter and something like that.
I've never done drugs in my life, but I kind of get the thing about getting addicted to something. This is very middle class. I'm quite addicted to Tara Muslata at the moment. And can I just say, I draw the line at harder dips. Can I just say that?
I've just started smoking one of those electronic cigarettes. Have you seen them? They look like normal cigarettes, but they're electronic.
Does it taste of cigarette, darling?
It tastes kind of custard. Custard mixed with cigarettes.
Oh, seriously, I've never been able to smoke, but I might try these.
You start this on that is, and work
yes,
up,
I'm
yeah.
working
on I make my own alcohol patches with cider and elastoplast.
Former government drug czar Professor David Nutt claimed that bankers high on cocaine caused the credit crunch. Professor Nutt claims cocaine causes bankers to take more risks. Presumably that and the sure knowledge that even if you ruin an entire country's economy, you can still avoid prosecution and get a £1 million bonus. 2 points to Jeremy. Justin, have a listen to this. Let's go one way or another. I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna get you, get you, get you, get you one way or another. I'm gonna win you. I'll get you, I'll get you. God, Deborah Harry's aged badly, hasn't she? Justin, who had to explain his view on high earners one way or another?
This is a lovely story where in an ordinary week, the story of Vince Cable calling out One Direction would be the weirdest story of the week. But this is the week where we've also had a man punch his horse after a football match. and Justin Bieber wrote in Anne Frank's visitor's book in Amsterdam, I bet she would have been a believer. Vince Cable, he basically said it was immoral, that One Direction had earned £5 million each, and then he quickly backtracked when he realised that they had lots of fans and he would lose lots of votes in about 15 years' time when they could vote. I find the story fascinating, really. One Direction have earned £5 million each. That's Zayn, Niall, Harry, Lewis, Liam. Obviously, we're all familiar with them. I see them and I just think, Nando's is missing a shift.
Apparently he misheard.
Yeah.
And
he thought that Harry Styles was the leader of an investment bank or something.
No, I think he didn't know the question was about One Direction at all.
It's funny that he didn't know about One Direction because they talk of little else but fiscal stimulus.
Yes, that's true. Do you not think boy bands and cabinets are a bit similar? Because I was thinking about that. You always have the intense one, don't you? That's Osborne, presumably. The crier.
There's always a fat one.
Yes, and there's... Who should we have?
Oh, Gary Barlow or Eric Pickles.
Eric Pickles.
Eric Pickles. The one for the mums. Who's that? William Hague, do you think? William Hague for the mums?
Oh, dear.
Who's this?
Yeah, he's the most
it's
of a worry,
Cameron,
isn't he?
Cameron, actually.
Really? Cameron charming, for the mums?
Charming and baby-faced.
And then there's the sensitive one. We could have Ken Clark on prison reform. We could have quite nice. And then Michael Gove on drums. Vince Cable has been forced to explain his position on the finances of boy band One Direction. Having originally declared their earnings grossly immoral, he later retracted his comments, saying he had misheard the question. The band were recently featured in the top 15 wealthiest British music artists under the age of 30 rich list. Oh, I'd have been in that if I was younger, and richer, and musical, and British. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Ms. Front.
This is a cutting sent in by Lynn Tenkate. And it says, we can be justly proud of much of what we have achieved. At trust level, Epsom and St Helier was in the top 10% of NHS trusts for SMR, standard mortality rate. In simple terms, this means that your chance of dying in our hospitals was among the best in the country.
Mr Hardy.
Sandra, I'm indebted to David Barnett from the world of the internet. And it's an election flyer from the Gwynir, Gwythian and St Earth ward in Cornwall under the heading Renewable Energy. You either love it or hate it. Personally, I have mixed views.
Mr Rifkin.
This is from Jeff Pictall in Cumbria, and it's from the Northwestern Evening Mail. The Evening Mail is hoping to speak to a local Crofts contestant. Are you entering your dog?
Let's take a look at the final score. Rebecca and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Hugo and Justin with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from Home and Garden magazine sent in by Elizabeth Fenton.
Why not brighten up a white bathroom with splashes of colour in the form of towels or a colourful stool?
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Rebecca Front, Jeremy Hardy, Hugo Rifkin and Justin Morehouse. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news is read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Gareth Gwynne, Simon Littlefield and Tom Neenan, with additional material by Susan Murray, Rania Maguire and James Bugg. The producer was Sam Bryant.